Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
You can get a lot done in 90 minutes. You can catch up on the last 3 episodes of Next. You can watch a World Cup match. You can see a movie. What you can't do in 90 minutes is get from the back of the line at the Denver DMV to the front of the line at the Denver DMV. Our Spencer Soyser explains the current issues.
Now serving.
Nobody wants to spend their day at the DMV.
Window number 10.
Including the people who are being paid to spend their day at the DMV.
The last time I waited like an hour and a half.
Rita is not a huge fan of the wait times at Denver's DMV branches. He's been here a few times this week.
The time for that, I walk home.
The city says the wait time problem is because of staffing challenges brought on by its rolling closure model.
One of our 4 quadrants of the city has been closed for a week. And then the following week, another quadrant is closed.
City Treasurer Sophia Hassman oversees the DMV and thinks she knows why there's staffing problems. After the migrant crisis in 2024, Mayor Johnston cut the city budget, and the DMV went with the rolling closure model.
Essentially, a staff employee might not know where they're working tomorrow or the next week. And that creates a lot of inconsistency, I would say.
In 2019, wait times were about 20 minutes. Now, an hour and a half. And at the Tremont location in Five Points, about an hour and 53 minutes.
110 minutes would have been a welcome wait from start to finish. I'd spent about 4 hours doing DMV.
Even elected officials are stuck waiting too.
I think I was there 3 hours.
Right now, the DMV has 4 branches plus the Tremont location, which also serves commercial customers. Those are often lengthier appointments. Now the city plans to open all 4 locations each week and have Tremont exclusively do commercial work.
Getting the commercial customers separated from the residential customers, truly having their own center, will reduce wait times eventually.
The city says there are a growing number of DMV tasks that can be handled online or at a kiosk in Colorado now. And if people only came when it was necessary, that would really help. But the other staffing issue is training. There's a 12-week training process in the classroom required by the state for new DMV employees and a long audit process after that. So it takes a while to get new employees through that and to get them working as well.
Now, Spencer, I know at any workplace, one of the things you have to balance is the paid time off that people get. Anytime I'm not on this program, people get their you-know-what in a bunch as if I'm not allowed to take vacation time. Apparently, that's an issue with the DMV as well.
Yeah, we actually like those days around here, but it's a 55% effective staffing level that they say that they have. So way too many people get great days off. In Denver, you get 28 and a half days off if you've worked there for 15 years or more, plus 12 paid holidays. They say between people being on leave, PTO, this really long training process that they have, there's only people working 55% of the time at their full capacity.
Interesting. Well, as I well know, when I'm gone, it's a vacation day for everybody.
Good.
Spencer, thank you. President Trump's Department of Education says it's investigating yet another school district in Colorado for civil rights violations, the latest in a string of allegations against schools around the Denver metro area. An education policy expert tells us these constant threats to take money away from school districts is unlike anything he's seen. Cherry Creek Schools is the latest district to find itself in the crosshairs of the Trump administration, specifically the Department of Ed. The feds say they got complaints from parents about clubs and parent committees that discriminate based on race. They pointed to one parent group called the Voices of Color Committee. The feds also say some classroom programs and teacher training courses focus on equity, discriminate against white kids. It's the third time the Department of Education has opened a civil rights investigation into a metro area school district in the last year. The feds have threatened enforcement action against Denver and Jeffco as well, claiming that gender-neutral bathrooms in those schools violate the rights of female students. Kevin Wellner, research professor at CU Boulder and the director of the National Education Policy Center, says the Trump administration isn't following the traditional investigative process. Instead, they're publicizing the allegations and making threats before completing a thorough investigation.
I think shock and awe is probably a good description of the strategy that the administration has been using. The administration has been, with regard to higher education and with regard to K-12, using a dramatically increased threat of withdrawing federal funding to compel school districts and other governmental entities into compliance even before that full investigation.
Wellner points out that a thorough investigation into any of the districts would be difficult since the Trump administration has gutted the Department of Education and its Office of Civil Rights. Cherry Creek Schools says it's still reviewing this complaint. A small town in southeastern Colorado is basically giving away buildings to people willing to move there. Our Mark Salinger explains the catch.
Some buildings look good for their age. This isn't one of them.
It's been here about 100 years, man. It's been here forever.
The ceiling is crumbling. The walls just got rebuilt to keep them from falling. And yet...
we are going to bring this building back to life.
Entrepreneurs see opportunities.
This is my lovely wife, Cheyenne Jackson.
And this is my husband, Tyrone Jackson.
The Jacksons bought this old pharmacy after moving from the Denver area to Ordway, a town of about 1,250 miles east of Pueblo. A town that is also searching for a new life. Even the guy who runs Ordway...
is that the old pharmacy?
...agrees.
We were a crumbling town, and now we're going to be a rebuilt town.
Jerry Barber is the part-time mayor with a head full of ideas.
We were to the point where people would drive down our street and say, this is an ugly town. Who would want to live here?
On a main street full of empty storefronts, Jerry thinks basically giving away real estate can bring people and money back.
And we came up to the idea that we'll give it to you cheap, real cheap.
We ended up getting it for a price where it made sense.
We gave it to them for $3,500 and say, okay, use that money to fix it.
It is going to be a laundromat. There is no laundromat in Crawley County.
If they don't have it done in 3 years, it comes back to us.
I'm more excited about fixing it up and giving something back to the community, a place for them to go wash their laundry, a place for kids to go play their games, a place to go get a dirty soda if you want.
A gathering spot,
exactly. That's for me is more exciting than getting the building at the price.
Five buildings in Ordway, including the old pharmacy, have already sold for a couple $1,000s, and the mayor is hoping to do the same with another three in the next few months.
So one time we were a big, beautiful town full of business, and now we're just a little town trying to revive ourselves.
It's kind of an old way of living down here.
The Jacksons are finding new opportunities.
I've dug my toes in and I ain't going nowhere.
In a town that hopes the right price brings new life.
New beginning.
New beginning. Always on one.
New beginning.
The city is also working with historical grants to get more money to restore the businesses. They're even willing to go to court and take over dilapidated buildings that aren't being used anymore. Really novel idea, Kyle, to a very real problem. Let's go in and buy a building.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think all of us who grew up in small towns that kind of got hollowed out, you know, wonder what life would be like if we were back in that small town. What caused Ordway to hollow?
It's a really interesting story from Ordway. So back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of farmers in that area sold away their water rights to Front Range communities that were growing at the time. And then all the farming basically stopped because there was no water. So that isn't coming back because water rights are so expensive. So there's new ways to try and bring people back to the area.
By and dry decades later.
Yep.
All right, Mark Salinger, thank you. Xcel customers in Colorado are facing one of the biggest electric rate hikes in state history. Xcel says it needs to raise rates again after investing millions in grid expansion and renewable energy, but consumer advocates are asking regulators to say no this time. Xcel first asked the Public Utility Commission to increase base electric rates last year. They were then looking for a 10% increase, which would be about $10 on residential bills each month. Now, of course, first rule of negotiating, always ask for more than you're going to get. Xcel has since reached a settlement with a group of stakeholders and large retail customers to whittle down their request to almost 6% increase. So that would be about $6 on monthly residential bills. State regulators are considering that settlement in hearings this week. There are opponents, like the state's utility consumer advocate and the AARP, who say that's still too much of an increase to drop on people. But Xcel says it's got to recoup the $225 million it invested into things like renewable energy and transmission lines. Meanwhile, Democrats at the state capitol are putting new restrictions on the few remaining coal-fired power plants in Colorado. Those plants were supposed to be phased out by the end of the decade, but they now have orders from the Trump administration to keep burning coal. The new regulation signed into law this week will require coal plants to install modern pollution controls if they have to operate into the 2030s. Those plants would also have to regularly report the cost and energy to stay open. Colorado still has 6 operating coal-fired plants. They're all nearing retirement by 2030. We've talked quite a bit about a plant in Moffat County, far northwest Colorado, that was scheduled to shut down last year, but it's been forced to resume operations under an emergency order from the Trump administration. Some consumer advocates, even the utility that operates that plant, have raised concerns that forcing the old plant to stay open requires customers to shoulder the costs of repairs and maintenance. The Trump administration says it needs to stay online for grid reliability.
They can move like a wave across the ecosystem, and we see major amounts of mortality.
Colorado's drought-stricken forest did not need this. A very hungry beetle is back. And one woman in Denver is using her experience with death to encourage the rest of us to live life to the fullest. That's next.
A beautiful spring day, lots of sunshine, clear skies for the most part, light winds, and no severe weather, which in this month of June is a rare thing indeed. We do have temperatures soaring back in the 90s tomorrow after a below average temperature trend today, thanks to a weak cool front that came in from the north this morning. We do have some high levels of ground level ozone, so the air quality is not great. This alert will be out through tomorrow afternoon. We're still talking about fire weather, especially over western Colorado, where humidity values have dipped into the single digits. Behind that morning cool front, winds out of the east and northeast have brought in some low-level humidity, so Denver is not under the red flag warning and kind of getting a break from the fire weather temporarily. While western Colorado, we're about to see that weather ramp up with winds and temperatures increasing tomorrow. So fire weather warnings there. Here in Denver, our temperatures in the 70s, which is about 5 to 6 degrees below average, will dip into the 60s come 11 o'clock tonight or so. Your 7-day forecast includes a warm up tomorrow as winds increase out of the south, 92 degrees tomorrow. Another front Saturday brings us a beautiful day, but if you have outdoor plans this weekend, and who doesn't, pay attention to the forecast on Sunday. A stronger cold front will bring the chance for rain and colder weather, and that could mean highs in the 60s Sunday into Monday. And again, lightning will be a big threat for campers and hikers and bikers. We're back to the upper 80s Tuesday, 90s Wednesday, record high temperatures possible the middle part of next week.
Colorado's forests sure are going through it right now. Drought, fire risk, now a massive swarm of pine beetles ready to eat all the dried out bark. Colorado's pine beetle problem is so bad you can see it from the air. According to an aerial survey done by the State Forest Service, the mountain pine beetle infestation has really exploded on the Front Range this year. The outbreak has increased almost 150% across the 9 Front Range counties. Now, in a good year, there is a benefit to those beetles. They can kill off diseased trees. They can make room for new growth. But in a year like this, when the entire forest is stressed and vulnerable, well, they can cause real problems. The more trees they kill, the more fuel for wildfires they leave behind.
It's not just a slow death. It's pretty much a fast death for these trees, which is why it's a concern when these bark beetles really start to build up populations, is that they can move like a wave across the ecosystem, and we see major amounts of mortality.
Dan West there from the State Forest Service says the outbreak on the Front Range is especially concerning because it's raising the fire risk in high traffic areas. Governor put together a task force late last year to focus on this problem. We could all use a reminder to live life to the fullest. Some folks in Sloan's Lake are walking by that reminder daily.
It appears to be a wall and a chalkboard, but what it really is about people's hopes, dreams, and their desires to do something before they can't.
Denverite, encouraging our neighbors to live with no regrets. Next. Neighbors in Sloan's Lake are confronting their mortality. It's more joyous than it sounds, I promise you. There's a neighbor there who is particularly well acquainted with death, and she's encouraging the rest of her community to live life to the fullest.
It appears to be a wall and a chalkboard, but what it really is about people's hopes, dreams, and their desires to do something before they can't.
Dad, I want to go to Venezuela. I want to see the country where my mom lived.
Jaeger and Sophia, one of my first neighbors that I got to know. I moved here a year ago this week from Iowa, and I wanted to get to know my neighbors, but not in a way of, where do you work? What do you, you know, how many kids do you have? I wanted to know their dreams, their values, what they wanted to do with their life. Have grandchildren, travel to Asia. I love this one. Make my dog proud. That's a great one. Be at fully peace. They're all strong. It's a place where they can feel at home writing anything. It's a non-judgmental zone.
I saw the board a couple months ago. I thought it was awesome. I kind of share a similar background with Liza. I was also a nurse.
I'm a nurse and a death doula, yes. Different responsibilities, but the gifts are the same. You get to be with someone birthing their death. And what left me with, across the board, not what they did do in life, it's about the regrets they didn't do. And this board is a reminder of you still got it in you. Don't let regrets be the last word.
I want to go to Disneyland again because it's a fun place.
This is not about death. This board is far from about death. It's about living.
Oh, that is great stuff. One, the kids saying, I want to go to Disney again. And then make your dog proud.
Yeah, I think I agree with that
You
one.
Make Gooch proud
every I make
day.
Gooch proud.
Yep. Abby loves me too. Back with your feedback next. So much feedback tonight. Sheila writes, the mayor of Ordway has a great idea. This might be an opportunity for artists and creatives who can't afford to live and work in Denver or on the Front Range, who could bring a sense of beauty and hope to Southeast Colorado. It's funny, watching that piece as somebody who grew up in a small town in a rural area, I've always had such a longing to move back to a small town. And I think sometimes you romanticize it, right? You forget about the problems or whatever. But you see an opportunity, it's like that. Boy, you could help put your stamp on a community that people already love. That could be a great opportunity for some folks. Rebecca writes in about Spencer Stoischer's comment on how the next team really enjoys when I take vacation. Rebecca goes, oh, snap, Spencer, gotcha, Kyle. Indeed, he did. Producer Mallory got in my ear the second he said it and said, ooh, he got you. Blank. Bruce said, I ended up at the Loveland DMV for a driver's license renewal. Quick, professional, done in less than 10 minutes. Turned away in Lakewood. Months out in the Denver Metro and in the Springs. That's all you got to do. Like Bruce, you got to go DMV shopping. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.